You're listening to the Seth Adam Podcast.
You can tell who the real ones are. They won't get you down. You can tell who the real ones are. They won't let you down.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what's up? Thank you for listening to the Seth Adam Podcast. My name is Seth Adam. If you listened to episode 8, you'll note that episode 8 and episode 9 are both coming out on Memorial Day this week. There is no brand new podcast next week on June 3rd, but there will be a brand new podcast on Monday, June 10th. I had to do it this way because both episode 8 and episode 9 had time-sensitive content, and I actually was able to have the recording sessions with both guests in the same week. But that's some nerdy information you don't need to know anything about. Hey, I have some stuff going on this week. On Wednesday, May 29th, I'll be in New York City at the 11th Street Bar playing bass for my friend and singer-songwriter Todd Baker. On Thursday, May 30th, I'll be in Middletown, Connecticut at the Mattabesset Canoe Club. On Friday, May 31st, I'll be in Hamden, Connecticut at the brand new Celeron Treadwell for their grand opening. And on Saturday, June 1st, I'll be in Norwalk, Connecticut for a trio show at the 99 Bottles Beer Festival. Then next week, on Wednesday, June 5th, I'll be back in New York City at SIR Studios doing a singer-songwriter thing in the round with my friend Steve Rogers, Frank Viale, Maggie Hollenbeck, and Melissa Mulligan. I'm looking forward to that one. On Thursday, June 6th, I'm going to be in Hartford, Connecticut at Spectral Wired Cafe for my monthly residency there. And on Friday, June 7th, I'll be in my hometown of New Haven, Connecticut at Cave Va. It's a little wine bar on State Street. Always a good time. And on Saturday, June 8th, I'll be in Old Saybrook, Connecticut at the Penny Lane Pub. Well, I am excited about this episode, episode 9 of the Seth Adam Podcast. I had a Chip McCabe come over and we talked some music, we talked some Americana, we talked some metal. But most importantly, we talked about the Connecticut music scene. I mean, the guy has just done so much for the Connecticut music realm. If you know anything about music here, then you most likely know something about Chip McCabe. He's also an author. He's a radio show host. He works with the city of Hartford, putting on a free lunchtime music series throughout the summer. And he also helps coordinate the Glastonbury Apple and Now Music Festival. Chip does an amazing job helping to promote the Connecticut music scene. He's a great guy, and I hope you enjoy this interview with him. Here he is, Chip McCabe. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here today with the man, the myth, the legend, Chip McCabe. Chip McCabe, welcome to the Seth Adam Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Your intro is long, but I'm going to start with your intro.
Okay.
Here we go. The Metal Dad blog, 666 Days of Metal, the book, Wrong Side of the Tracks radio show, The Metal Dad radio show, both available on CygnusRadio.com.
Correct.
The Apple Harvest, Glastonbury Apple Harvest and Music Festival coordinator, and I don't know what you would call it, the Hartford Summer Music Series coordinator.
Sure. Yeah, that's right.
You do all those things.
I do.
Is there anything you don't do?
Sleep.
I know that one. That's an elusive thing.
It is.
So welcome to the podcast. I start the podcast with a segment called Full Disclosure. And just to be honest with the audience,
yeah,
that we have a working relationship outside of the podcast. And I'm trying to remember exactly where we know each other from. I could say the Connecticut Music Awards, but I don't know if we were necessarily introduced back then.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I knew you as a musician.
I think we formally met like by the time I played at the Glastonbury.
Yes. Yeah, we had definitely met, I think, at least once prior to that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's out of the way. Welcome. We're going to jump right in. Are you from Connecticut? Did you grow up here?
No, I'm a transplant. I had a very transient childhood. Most of my growing up in New Jersey, Jersey Shore area, to be exact.
That explains a lot.
Explains why I'm an Eagles and Phillies fan. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Among other things. But we lived all over the place. We were in Arizona for a year, California for a year. And then I came to Connecticut in the mid-90s to go to school up here. And then I left for a few years, went back to Philly. And then I came back up in 2001, I think. And I've been here ever since.
Would you new military family or?
Nope. Real estate. My father was chasing real estate markets all over the country in the 80s, trying to get rich. It didn't work.
That's not a common story.
No, not
I
at
never
all.
Heard that before.
Yeah.
And you went to school here. Where'd you go to school?
CCSU.
CCSU. That's
Central.
Well, that's kind of my alma mater.
Okay.
I went there when I was 18 in 1994.
Yep.
And I went for one semester for music, but they didn't let me into the music program. So
that was dumb.
Yeah. It was a weird thing. It was a whole other story. This show's about you. But I had to go home one day and I was like, Mom, Dad, I don't want to go to college anymore.
So I just missed you because I started at CCSU in 1995.
Oh.
So we just missed
each other. If I had only stayed,
I know.
The stars may have aligned. Oh, well. When did you take an interest in music?
Birth. I mean, honestly, there was always music on in my house as a kid, whether it was old country music or, you know, my mother loved Motown, so that was always on. My father loved what is now considered classic rock. For him, it was just rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always had music on in the car, in the house, while we were cleaning on a Saturday, there was music playing. It was just constant music. And I think that really hammered home a love of different genres of music too. It gave me a broad perspective of what was out there.
Well, I was going to ask, we share the common interest of enjoying a lot of Americana music.
Yes.
As well as a lot of metal music.
Yes, that is true.
Which we tell people that and they look at us like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah. My mother literally just this past, I've been listening to heavy metal music for over 30 years. And my mother literally just this past week was like, why do you still listen to that stuff? I'm like,
because it's awesome.
What you thought was a phase 30 years ago clearly isn't. Like,
yeah.
Let's just roll past that.
Dude, I just listened to Rust in Peace today.
Yeah, I mean, on the drive down here, I had Slayer on because I'm going to see them next week.
So. Where? Oh, where? I thought that tour was over.
This is the final leg. Yeah.
Oh,
this is
okay.
It. This is the final, the last few American shows, and then they're done.
No, the last one, I'm just going off on a tangent. The last one was Slayer. Was Opeth on that? Lamb of God was on it.
Lamb of God, Cannibal Corpse. And Amon Amarth.
But the tickets were like $120. I wanted to go so bad. It came to Mohegan, I think. And I was like, I can't really.
Yeah, that's too much.
I was just a new dad.
Yep.
So I was like, I can't really shell out $120. So let's talk about a little bit of metal.
Okay.
What got you into metal?
It was a combination of things. So in the 80s, you know, there was this whole thing called the Satanic Panic, if you remember, where everything was evil. Dungeons and Dragons was evil. Heavy metal music was evil. Stephen King was evil. It was all evil.
Like Tipper Gore?
The devil. Yes, exactly. The PMRC, everybody. And so there was a lot. Heavy metal was always in the news, I felt like, when I was a kid.
It's true.
And
then Judas Priest.
Judas Priest, yeah. That was a little bit later, the whole suicide trial and then Ozzy suicide trial. And, you know, but there was this, I lived in a neighborhood with a bunch of kids who were my age, but all of their older brothers and sisters listened to heavy metal, all the popular stuff, Maiden and Metallica and whatnot. And I think it was just a combination of, I was fascinated and scared crapless by it. And like Pandora's box, I just like had to open it. And then from that point forward, it was like, it just became a love and an obsession. I joke all the time that heavy metal is like my mistress. Like I always keep it hidden away sometimes, but I always come back to it, always. So,
well, as a fan of political kind of like Phil Oaks and protest music, I always tell people that like heavy metal was kind of like the first protest.
Oh, absolutely.
Rock.
I mean, in the 80s, especially the Reagan era, metal and punk both, it bred so much good music, Reaganomics and the threat of nuclear war and the Cold War and,
that was a big thing, was the Cold War.
Absolutely. Thrash metal alone. I did a post on the Metal Dad a while back when it was like, I think the 25th anniversary of the Chernobyl accident. And it was all about heavy metal bands that were singing and writing songs about our impending nuclear doom.
I remember that post.
So, I mean, there was a whole, and I could have just kept going and going and digging deeper and deeper into all of these bands that were writing these politically charged anthems about the man, you know?
Absolutely. And how about the Americana side of stuff?
Well, Willie Nelson is my all-time favorite musician.
That's right. I remember that. We talked about that.
And that was that comes directly from my grandmother. She loved Willie Nelson. She was a huge Willie Nelson fan. And we used, every time we were at her house, Willie Nelson was on. When we were traveling back and forth across country, Willie Nelson was usually the soundtrack. Uh-huh. He was just, he's always been a part of my life. And then from there, it's where I fell in love with, you know, Waylon and Cash and Merle and all everybody else in that pantheon.
The outlaw.
Yeah, the whole outlaw thing. And then I went back and fell in love with, you know, Patsy Cline and Farron Young and all those guys from the 50s and 60s. And it just was sort of, it just felt right because it was part of this, you know, as I was traveling throughout all of rural America as a kid, like I had this music on in the background, right? And so it just kind of fit my life at that point. And it's still just sort of a special part of who I am.
Did you happen to see there's a Linda Ronstadt documentary coming up?
I just saw a post about that, and it was a review saying that it was a fantastic documentary, so I have to go see it.
And that she's like a criminally underrated singer.
She is, and the stuff she did with Emmylou Harris and Dolly Parton, especially the trio, when they put it, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Have you ever been in any bands?
Once. I was in a grindcore band called Black Stool. Which we took the name off the side of a Pepto-Bismol bottle, may cause black stool. It's not, we were not named after a piece of furniture. And I just screamed into a microphone and we wrote these short little 1 minute blasts of crusty mayhem.
Was it, well, I guess it's not really the same thing. Who is Gigi Allen?
Yeah, he's more punk. So we were more akin to like Napalm Death. So fast, heavy, like kind of like death metal, but the songs are too short to be death metal songs.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of what it is. Yeah.
I had a friend in high school who we were in a prog rock band together and like he kind of introduced me and got me into like the Fates Warnings and stuff. Yeah. I think I was like into Queensryche. He's like, oh, you like Queensryche? Check this out.
Right.
And then got me into like the Metallica and the Megadeth and all that kind of stuff. And, he was into a lot of metal and I recall him showing me those bands that played like those short 1 minute songs. I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. that's like, I'll never forget the first time I heard a Napalm Death song. Cause it was like, what was that? You know what I mean? Like it was just so brutal, but yet so compact and just in your face for like 90 seconds.
It's almost like it was a competition between the punk bands and the metal bands, like, because the punk bands wrote short songs.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of
and
that.
And the
is,
metal bands are like, oh, yeah?
A lot of that Check is born out, out of the punk scene. I mean, you know, metal and punk have been kissing cousins for so long.
I say that all the time.
I don't think either scene wants to admit it out loud sometimes.
Right.
But some of the best metal bands grew out of the punk scene, and some of the best hardcore punk bands grew out of the metal scene. And, you know, to me, for a long time, especially in Jersey, those scenes were very much intertwined when I was in high school. When I came to Connecticut and the punk and metal scenes hated each other in the 90s, I was like, what in the hell is going on up here?
Yeah.
It was a weird, weird thing, weird time. But I think a lot of great bands grew out of both scenes.
I kind of remember that animosity going on. Because
there was,
I was more of the metal guy, but I had friends in punk bands and I went to punk shows.
I went to any show I could. Yeah. So I was at everything. But when you were the long-haired kid in the room at a hardcore show, you sometimes were like, am I getting beat up tonight? Like, what the hell's happening here? It was just weird. It was just weird.
That's fun. That's, oh man, that's flashback memories for me. Holy crap. So that's actually a segue, good segue to my next question. When did you start taking an interest in the Connecticut music scene?
When I first came to Connecticut, the first thing I did was, because I had started going to shows in high school, obviously, in New Jersey, going to see local bands and touring bands when I could. And when I came to Connecticut, the first thing I said to my roommate at the time in college, who was from Newtown, and he also had no clue what was in Hartford or New Haven. He was like from the sticks. And we went to the student center and picked up a Hartford Advocate. I was like, so where do I go to see music?
Yeah.
And the Advocate became my Bible for that first 3 years I was in Connecticut.
The Boiler Room? Did you go to the Boiler Room?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And Maxi Luna's in Plainville. And I mean, there were like a million places that don't exist anymore that I was at.
The Sting.
The Sting. Park in Bristol and all that stuff.
That
I mean,
place.
Yeah. So we, you know, I I took an interest specifically in heavy music in Connecticut right away, obviously, because those were my loves.
Right.
It really wasn't until I came back in 2001 that I started going deep into everything else Connecticut had to offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I left Connecticut to go work at a record label. And I worked for a heavy metal label called Relapse Records for three years.
Yeah.
And so my life was heavy metal,
right?
Period, end of story. And when I came back, you know, you want different outlets. You want different, you're in different moods for different types of music. And it just made sense to dig into the music in my backyard.
Sure.
And I just fell in love with so many different acts, and I just kept falling deeper and deeper in love.
So did that love kind of serve as a catalyst to get actually involved? And I'm moving towards.
Yeah. I mean, I had been booking shows, and even like not really knowing what the hell I was doing going back to like high school, right? Like booking shows. I remember we booked one in a funeral home because the guy let us rent the funeral home, and we put a couple bands in there. That was fun. But you know, it was when I was with the radio station WFCS at CCSU, we would put on a metal festival every year, and
it was
all local bands. I think we did it for 3 or 4 years. And then, that was sort of my love of live music. And when I went and worked at the record label, they were like, oh, you have
some street cred.
Yeah. You know how to put a show together, which means you also know how to deal with a booking agent. So you're going to book bands for our small, or book tours for our small bands.
Oh, wow.
And I started booking full US tours for some of these baby, we call them baby bands, who didn't have representation.
Right.
And so I got a lot of knowledge very quickly about the music industry and that side of the music industry.
Oh, wow.
And so when I came back to Connecticut, it just made sense to just continue to put on shows.
Oh.
So that's how that kind of all evolved.
This is like the missing link for me.
I know, right? Yeah.
Because the reason I bring it up, because we're going to skip over just a little bit, because if you haven't noticed, I go in a somewhat linear fashion.
Yeah.
It's just easier to establish things. So you're booking shows for the label. You come back to Connecticut. You continue to book shows. How does that lead up? And when did the CT Music Awards kind of come about?
So
is there anything missing and fill in the gaps? If there's anything,
I mean, there's nothing.
That?
So nothing in my life happens linear. It's all circuitous, right? Like, so when I came back to Connecticut, I got a job with the Hartford Current. Uh-huh. I wound up working with the Current for 13 years. Part of that was the Current used to own the Advocates, the Hartford Advocate, the New Haven Advocate, and the Fairfield County Weekly.
Right.
That was a dirty secret. Everybody thought the Advocates were independent, but they were owned by the Current, and the Current was owned by Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
Still is. So one of the last jobs I had working for the Current is they made me the marketing manager for all three Advocate papers, which is a 3-person job, but this is how you roll.
Was this like the condensing portion?
Exactly.
Of the years?
So they condensed the websites to CT.com. Mm-hmm. They all had one website. At one point they merged the Advocates with the WCCT, the TV station, because they were trying this weird sort of print TV mixed media thing, which could have worked if we had better people in charge.
Isn't that the way?
Yeah. And so, you know, I started thinking of how can I help promote this local music scene that I love through these outlets, right? We have these print products. We have these this website, CT.com was doing like a million page views a year at that point. And then you have this TV station. We had the Grand Band Slam through the Advocates.
Correct.
And I wanted to revamp the whole thing.
Right.
And they gave me permission. They said, take it. We're bleeding money on it. Do what you want with it, because we're going to kill it if you don't do something with it. And I didn't want that to go away. And so I turned what used to just be the Grand Band Slam voting in the paper into the Connecticut Music Awards.
Ah.
I said, I want to do a Grammy style award show. And they went, okay. And so they let me do it.
Wow.
And then we had then Grand Band Slam turned into like the three nights of concerts that we would do in conjunction with the Music Awards.
Because
so that's
they used
how that
to
happened.
Have the concerts with the Grand Band Slam thing.
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. And they gave you carte blanche to do that, huh?
Pretty much.
That's so awesome.
I think at that point in time, they were just really, I got lucky. I was there at a point in time where they were trying to impress Tribune. And they were trying to just throw any idea they had at the wall. I mean, that's how the two TV shows I produced came about. The Chips Unnamed Local Band Show and the Live and Local that we used to do.
Yeah.
I literally blurted out in a meeting once, we should do a local music TV show because nobody else does one. And a week later, the VP of marketing walked past me in the hallway and was like, we're going to green light that band show that you mentioned. I was like, oh, cool. Who do we get to host it? He's like, well, you know more about the scene than anybody. You host it. I'm like, what? This is a face for radio, pal, but okay. And so that's kind of how that came about. So, and then it was called Chip's Unnamed Local Band Show because I couldn't think of a good name for it. And the guy who was in charge of scheduling the programming
just
put it in as that. And they were like, oh, well, that's the name now. I'm like, no, it's not how that works. You can change this. But they didn't. They refused. So
that was kind of the Dave Matthews Band story from what I remember. Like, they didn't have a band name, so they just jotted down. So Dave Matthews is just kind of
Like Uncle Tupelo, where they just picked two words out of two different hats.
Is that how they did it? I never knew the story behind that.
They wrote
that
a bunch of words on a bunch of pieces of paper, mixed them up in two hats, and pulled one out. It was Uncle, and one was Tupelo.
I thought it was just like Tupelo. Tupelo is such a huge reference to that scene. I thought it was just like on purpose.
There's always a story.
That's so funny. Next logical question for me. Why did it end? Why did the CT Music Awards end?
Oh man. So
you can say, I don't want to talk about it.
So here's the thing. So I did them for 3 years as a Tribune employee, right? Created this thing fully knowing that it would become Tribune intellectual property at some point because I was a Tribune employee. Right? And so I left the Current. I left at that point, the Advocates had gone away.
Right.
This new CT Now product was there. It really, they didn't know what they were doing with it at that point, you know, and I just felt like it wasn't, didn't want to be there anymore. It wasn't anything I wanted to promote, but I did say to them, I will freelance these music awards for you if you want. So in the fourth year, which was the year we were at Infinity Hall, we moved from the Bushnell to Infinity Hall.
I remember that. Yep.
I wasn't an employee of the company anymore and I was trying to do this on my own outside of the company. And I had their resources, but I went from trying to herd feral cats in the building to like herding feral raccoons outside of the building. Like it got even more difficult to put together.
Oh, wow.
And so in year five, I came to them well in advance and said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Right.
You have the template. You know how to do it. Find someone else who can host it. I'll even give you a bunch of names. Go do it.
Yeah.
Because I built this thing for it to outlive me anyway. And they went, nah, never mind. And then it just became voting in the paper, and like now it just went away. It just faded off.
Yeah,
into
oblivion. There isn't even like a grand band slam type thing anymore.
They don't even use the name Connecticut Music Awards anymore. It's just because it's not part of their brand, so it's just gone.
Well, I'm going to give you a little side story here.
Okay.
Around the time that the CT Music Awards were starting up, and I was I think I had just put out my Steel Tempered Pride record.
Yep.
And I fell into quite a depression and I was drinking a lot and I was just miserable. And, my wife will attest to this. I was just miserable. And we actually, we attended one of the CT Music Awards, I think because I got nominated.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it might've been the second or the third one. But, when I went to it, I realized how diverse and how huge the Connecticut music scene really is.
Yeah, true story.
And I really didn't know. I was really in my bubble. I was the New Haven area. I was depressed because people that I was playing music with had gone on to do other things,
right?
Which was great for them. I was just sad about it. And I put this record out and then nothing was happening with it because I couldn't make anything happen. Just, you know, any poor me, whatever. Pity party. But I went to the CT Music Awards because I somehow got myself on the ballot and nominated, which was great. And it kind of reaffirmed not only for me that I could actually do something again, but that the music scene was really, really, it was just
vibrant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of a different word, but yeah. And I was like, why am I so down? Why am I so depressed? And it actually helped lift me up.
That's awesome.
And bring me out of my funk.
I appreciate that. And, you know, it's funny because for every musician that loved the music awards, there were like three that hated it. And
yeah.
And I knew. And
I heard the stories.
I knew going in that this would not be universally loved. Like, I'm not an idiot. I know how this works. I know how artists work. I know that there are some people who just, they're adamant that you can't, you know, quantify or commodify art in any way, shape, or form, and it just is what it is. And I get that, and I love that.
And that wasn't the reason for it.
It wasn't the reason. The whole point of the CT Music Awards was to try and take this little tiny state mm-hmm. with all these little bubbles, yep. New Haven, New London, Fairfield County, Hartford, and kind of bring them all together, even if it was just for one night, mm-hmm. where you could all look at each other in a room and be like, holy crap.
You're that guy.
I want to play with that guy, or I want to play with that band.
I heard of you.
And make those connections. And, you know, let's do it. Let's have a fancy dress up party and hand out some funny trophies and just do it that way.
That's exactly what it was for me. And it was nice to see like friends of mine too. Like, yeah. Hey man, like all of a sudden I just realized that we're all family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's
funny because some of my biggest detractors with the Music Awards are people that I have today really good relationships with and have the utmost respect for.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally got where they were coming from then. And I still do.
Mm-hmm.
But my whole point, again, was just to try and shine a spotlight on a scene. And I get it if you're in a band and you're working hard and you didn't get voted to be one of the top five in your category.
Sure.
I totally get how you could sour on something like this. So I never held it personally when I saw something on Facebook or someone posts like, oh, this is all BS.
Yeah.
Cool. Whatever. It's all good. You know what I mean?
I remember, too, just a little side note about it, like because I grew up at a time when, and I was coming up, even though I played in a prog rock band, the New Haven music scene, like in the early 90s, mid 90s, maybe even to the late 90s, was really, really shaken between like what we were talking about before at the Tune-In, the punk bands and the ska bands, and even some other stuff that was going on, mm-hmm. Which escapes me right now. Name's going to come back later. But there was people were saying it was like the next Seattle. You know,
which
I thought was a little absurd, but I'm like, you know, for reference of scale, you know,
sure.
like, okay, sure. You know, it was a really, really vibrant time. The Chapel Street Festival was happening every year. This predates the Arts and Ideas Festival.
Right. Yep.
There was a lot of stuff going on, and then it just kind of like, and there was a lot of clubs, and then it just kind of like lulled out for a while. And it seemed like, you know, when the CT Music Awards started happening, like, that's when it seemed like it all started picking back up again. I don't know if anybody ever told you that, but
not at all.
That was my perception.
That's interesting. That's the first I've heard that. I mean, coming to Connecticut from New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
I looked at Connecticut as the same way people looked at New Jersey. It was a turnpike state. It was a stop between, we were the stop between New York and Philly.
Yeah.
And you guys were the stop between New York and Boston.
Yep.
But when I got here in the mid 90s, I realized like, holy crap, New Haven especially mm-hmm. has this crazy scene with all these bands that are just, they're so good at what they do. And it kind of hammered home the point early on that it doesn't matter where you're from. Mm-hmm. You can still breed talent. Talent breeds talent.
I say that all the time. Mark Mulcahy was one of the names I was.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And just to riff off of what you're just saying there, I remember being on a short tour I think it was in South Carolina. I may have told this story before, but I was at a club I wasn't up yet, and I was just going through my phone, and our friend Daphne mm-hmm. had posted something about, you know, why does Connecticut keep losing all these musicians? Everybody is moving to New York and Nashville and everything. And I said, I don't want to get myself in trouble. I said, music is not part of the culture here like it is down south.
Yeah, I agree.
I think I was talking with Brian Delzani about this.
Who is a touring warrior, by the way.
Yes, yes. And, you know, and I experienced that through my own touring and stuff. It's just part of you grow up with it. You know, there isn't anybody playing on their front porch in Connecticut, whereas other spots down south they are. But that doesn't mean that music isn't part of who we are.
Right.
There's so much of it here.
Right.
And it was really nice for that one shining moment to have that spotlight on it, which was your intention.
Awesome. Thank you. So, that was my intention.
We're going to move on to the book.
Okay.
Which I'm terrible. I still haven't bought it.
That's okay.
Don't tell the author. I still haven't picked it up. Every time I remember to do it, I forget. Plus, I'm still kind of coming out of my dad.
Yeah.
New dad.
It's all good.
Haze and stuff. But the book, 666 Days of Metal. What is it about? I don't know anything about it. Tell me about it. Sell it to me.
I did a blog. called 666 Days of Metal, which was another crazy idea that I had that grew out of this time that I was at the Current. I was approached in 2015, I think it was, to do a 100 Greatest Metal Albums post for CT.com.
Okay.
And so I was just jotting down albums one night and I looked down at the piece of paper. I had like 200. I'm like, how am I going to get this down to 100 and feel good about this list? Like personally feel good about it. So I went into work the next day and I said to the guy, this guy, Tom, who was running the website. And I said, what if we did 666 albums? And he was like, and I said, and what if we launched one a day, every day for 666 days? And he goes, that's a 2-year project. I'm like, I can count. I know how many days that is. And he looked, he paused for a second and
he didn't
looked
get the
over,
reference, did he?
No. And he looked over at me and he's like, that's genius. Let's do it. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And so I went home immediately and came up with my list of, actually I came up with about 750 albums and had to like pare it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 days later, the Current, our boss comes to us and is like, they don't want that on the website because of the number 666.
Oh, they finally found out.
And I'm like, yeah, I think kids still have like nudie ads in the back of it.
I
you're
know.
Worried about
yeah.
that number. Like they're promoting prostitution, I think. And you're worried about that number, whatever. So he, in an infinite wisdom, bought the domain the night before, 666daysofmetal.com.
For so you or
just
to, take
just
away
to have it so that no one else could get it.
Oh, okay.
And so he was like, forget it. We'll just build it out. And I've got the domain and I'll pay the $20 a year to host it.
Mm.
And you just do it. Here's the keys to the car.
Oh, cool.
And so I, for 666 consecutive days, every day I posted about a different metal album. I wrote about a different metal album every day.
Did you build
counting
some
down,
up?
Counting down from what I thought was, you know, 666 to the most essential metal album of all time. Not greatest, not best of, but to me, most essential, meaning they did the most for what formulates metal as we know it today, this pantheon of metal.
I won't ask you that because I want people to buy the book.
Okay. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you at all what's number one. And so then I, midway through this process, I thought to myself, I think I was actually on vacation in like Gettysburg with the family. And I'm like posting about metal albums on vacation because I can't miss a day. And I was like, you know what? This would be a cool book idea, I wonder. And then I spent almost 2 years editing all of those blog posts down into this book and then trying to submit it to both literary agents and publishing houses.
Uh-huh.
A couple of which were interested, but wanted me to like chop it down. Cause they're like, you're a first time author and we're not putting out a 700 page book by a first time author. And I'm like, well, then you're not putting out my book. You know,
yeah,
I was like drawing the line in the sand and stamping my feet like a petulant child. And so then I just published it myself through Amazon's Create Space.
Amazon does that?
They do. I don't like the platform now. They've changed it quite a bit since I did this project in 2017. Uh-huh. But, you know, at the time, it was a really user-friendly, easy way to publish a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the downfall of publishing your own book is you have to do all the work, all the legwork to promote it and get it out there.
Yeah.
But for me, it wasn't about selling a million copies, contrary to what my kids were hoping for. For me, it was like, I'm going to put this book out, and if 100 people buy it, I'll be stoked. Like, this is just a passion project. Here it is. More than 100 people have bought it, so I'm stoked.
Please tell me you sold it for $6.66.
No, I sold it. It retailed for like $25 because it was so huge and massive. Oh. And the percentage that Amazon takes from authors when you publish through them
are ridiculous.
So I was like, I felt like a musician. Like if I'm going to get my pennies on the dollar here, then I've got to set a price point that like I can actually make a couple bucks off this thing.
Here's your royalty check for 97 cents.
I get royalty.
Congratulations.
I call them royalty checks for this book and for the book I wrote about Hartford, The 100 Things to Do in Hartford Before You Die. And that was through an actual publishing house. And I get my, you know, twice a year checks. And it's like, I laugh every time I open them. Let's just put it that way.
I do too. Yeah. I get one every couple, seems like every couple of years. To be honest with you, when Pandora first came out, my first record was on there and it was like 2007. I used to get some pretty decent coin.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe like $130, $95 every 3 months.
Yeah.
I think my last royalty check was probably $13. And I have more material out and getting more plays.
Right.
Which is just astounding. But anyway, stay in school, kids.
Yep.
No, just kidding. So the book did the book translate to the radio show, or did the radio show translate to the book, or how, what's the relation, or is there one there?
So I initially was approached by the guys at Cygnus when I was doing the blog 666 Days of Metal, so 2015, 2016, about doing a metal radio show, because at that point in time they didn't have any.
Right.
As of right now, they have two, me and another guy. And I said, yeah, let's do this. And that original radio show I did for them lasted maybe 6 or 8 months. And I was like, I can't, this is too much work. And so I kind of bailed out. And then I started the Metal Dad blog after the Lonesome Noise blog I was writing for crashed and burned. And when I started the Metal Dad blog, I was at a show at Arch Street Tavern. I'll never forget this. And Frank Rotelli was there. Of course, Frank is involved in Cygnus Radio. And he was so excited about this new blog, The Metal Dad.
Yeah.
I was telling him all about it. And he was like, you should do t-shirts and hats and pins, and you should totally exploit this whole Metal Dad thing. And I was like, that's a great idea. I was like, maybe I'll do a radio show. And he was like, yes, do that. And so that's really kind of how the Metal Dad radio show was born.
Oh, okay.
Based off of, it is sort of kind of based off the blog, and that it's got the same name, but the content is slightly different.
Where do you find the time to do all this stuff? And we're not even at the music festivals yet.
Yeah. I mean, the radio show, I do two a week. They're 1 hour each.
Yeah.
So it's, like 90 minutes with prep time to piece them together and slap it on air.
God bless you. Or Satan bless you if we're talking about Miller.
Sure.
Please don't be offended.
Depends
anybody
on which show you're
there
listening to.
And you have the other blog and the other radio show, The Wrong Side of the Tracks. Does that kind of like work the same way?
So Wrong Side of the Tracks was just I needed another outlet for like you mentioned, all the Americana stuff. And I'm a huge fan of the blues. My first book idea was actually going to be a book about the history of the blues based off, because I was a history major in college.
Oh, cool.
And my thesis for my degree was about the social and cultural imperialism of white British rock musicians stealing black American blues music, basically.
Absolutely.
And now there's been a million books written about this, but in the early 90s, there weren't a ton. And so, I had this 60-page paper that I was going to turn into a book that a hard drive crash obliterated. And the professor I had handed in the hard copy to went on sabbatical, so I never got it back.
Oh my God, man.
But so I have all this music that I loved and this knowledge of this music, and I needed an outlet for it, basically. And so I could write about it, and I do write about it, but I enjoy radio so much. I did radio in college. Radio has been a part of my life for a long time. So I approached Cygnus and was like, can I do another show? And they were like, absolutely. So that's just kind of how that came about.
Oh, that's so cool, man. I'm glad that you were able to have another outlet.
Yeah, me too.
It's kind of, I'm going to go back and talk about myself right now.
Because you've been on that show.
Well, it's the same thing. Like, I'm taking out a lot of stuff. I play bass for two different people. I play drums for somebody else. I have my own projects going. I just started this podcast. We're moving. I'm hopefully going to be recording some people. Not on a large commercial scale,
sure,
but just like work with them. Just a couple of friends of mine, but... Yeah, people are like, when do you find the time? It's like, it's about passion. Like, I just want to do it. Like, I have to do it. If I don't do it, I'll be sitting there kicking myself.
If it wasn't enjoyable for me, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
like, that's just what it comes down to. And that's really kind of what happened with the Music Awards. It stopped being enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I tried to hand it off to the people who rightfully should have been doing it, and they just pissed it away.
That's one way of putting it.
It happens.
I'm sure that people do it all the time. It's a shame. When did your involvement with the Glastonbury Apple Harvest Festival, now called the Glastonbury Apple Harvest and Music Festival?
So again,
why am I not playing this year?
Sorry. We try to rotate artists. I'll give you that whole spiel that I do.
No, I'm just teasing.
So again, circuitous route, right? Mm-hmm. I left the Current and got a job with what was then the Glastonbury Chamber of Commerce, because I wanted to go from corporate media I literally was looking for a nonprofit. I wanted to go work somewhere where I could, like, I was also friends with all the people I worked with.
A little more freedom.
Absolutely. Gotcha. So I got a job as the marketing director for the Glastonbury Chamber of Commerce. They're now the CT River Valley Chamber of Commerce, because they merged with East Hartford. And they do, they've been producing for 20 something years, the Glastonbury Apple Harvest Festival.
Okay.
And they, when I stepped in there in July of that year, they were like, how can we make this better? What do you have any suggestions? I'm like,
music,
you've got two cover bands over the course of 3 days and a bunch of like pie eating contests and karate demos.
Oh.
Like, no offense to the karate demos. Like, let's put some music out there and make this. And I told them about the Meriden Daffodil Festival. And I was
We could
do what they do in Meriden.
Yeah.
And Robbie DeRosa and I, when he was doing Daffodil Fest, we used to joke that we were like the bookend festivals. He was first, I was last.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so they were like, okay, well, it's our 40th anniversary this year. I was like, great, let's do 40 bands, 3 stages, 3 days. And they were like, what? And we just did. And I went out and booked 40 bands, got a sound company that I like. And that was the start of that. And this will be my 6th year this year.
I was just going to ask you how long it's been going on. 6 years. I think it's one of the better organized events that I've ever performed at.
Thank you.
And I've performed in, again, three different fashions. I played for me, Seth Adam, and then I played with my buddy Jeff Burnham. I played with El Sarah. So I think you played
with Steve Rogers when you were Arms and Voices, right? Did you guys play?
I don't think I did that one. I think I was away.
Okay.
I was away for that one. I couldn't make that one previous booking. But yeah, it's definitely one of the, and I'm not trying to float your boat here. it's just a compliment. I got to give credit where credit is due.
I appreciate that.
It's really well organized.
You know, you're not the first person to pass that compliment along, and we take pride in that, in all honesty.
Well, I've played a lot of festivals and continue to, and I'm sure I will continue to do so. And there's so many times you show up and it's so disordered, like, oh no, you got to talk to John over there.
Right.
You talk to John. And then you go to John. Hey, John. No, you're supposed to be over here.
Listen, we have some of that. Like, I'll get a call on the radio. Like, you have a band that's looking for you right now. And they're like, they loaded in on the other side of the festival when they should have been loading in over here. Like, you get that sometimes. But I think as far as when you're supposed to be there, when you're supposed to go on, we don't run late or over on set times. Like,
it's
a well-oiled machine.
Exactly.
And that is the way I want it. And we also are one of the only festivals where you can literally see every band if you want. We don't overlap stages. I refuse to do that.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I hate it because you can literally hear it from one end of the space to the other.
Yeah, I mean, even like this year, Daffodil Fest lineup was great this year, and I had to make some really hard choices when I was there on the Saturday. I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to go see X Band because
for the patrons
playing
too.
At the exact time. But yeah, as a fan, I hate that.
Yeah,
every metal festival in the world does that.
Yeah,
it just drives me nuts. And so when we sat down to do Apple Harvest Festival, Apple Harvest and Music Festival now, I was like, this is how we're doing it. We're going to do 3 stages and we're going to rotate them. And then that way you can see whatever band you want.
You're going to have to acronym the name now.
I know, right? It's so long.
The Glastonbury A.
It's like G A
A H M H.
Too many letters.
ABC. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not good at that. When is the Glastonbury?
October 18th, 19th, and 20th.
18th night, that's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
It's always the weekend after Columbus Day weekend or Indigenous Peoples Day weekend.
Thank you. I prefer that title because I'm a hippie. And it's a paid, you have to pay it again, right?
Yeah, it's like $5 to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like a major investment.
No, and that's basically just to help us cover our costs. I mean, it's, you know. But $5 on a Saturday, for example, you could come in at 11 a.m. and see 18 bands for $5.
Yeah, and it's they got the beer garden right in between.
Which is growing this year. They're expanding it again.
Yeah. I got to make sure I'm not playing that weekend.
And it's literally, I mean, they've done a fantastic job over the last few years building out the beer garden with like local breweries and the hard apple cider, what their name is, one of our sponsors. So there's that there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Angry Orchard. But even our vendors, we've tried to like weed out the, like, you know, guys selling gutters and like bring in actual really good vendors. The person handling that's done a great job. So yeah, we're just really trying to make this sort of like one of the premier festivals of Connecticut.
Are you still working for that organization?
No, I work for the Hartford Business Improvement District now.
That's what I thought.
Which is why I booked the free music in Hartford.
Well, that's what we're going to get into. When did that come about?
So I started, I'm in year three, technically 3.5 with the bid in Hartford. And we started with the audio feed series on Constitution Plaza. Mm-hmm. So that's in its fourth year this summer.
Okay.
Because we were just going to test the waters of what would a free lunchtime music series look like.
Mm.
And Constitution Plaza is private property.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't have to go through city permitting or anything like that.
Oh, nice.
And we went to the property owners of Constitution Plaza and said, we want to do this. And they were like, absolutely. So
wow.
There's already a built-in crowd on the plaza, as you've seen, people yep. just walking back and forth at lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as long as the weather's nice, it's we get good crowds up there.
So you did the audio feed at Constitution Plaza the first yep. year. Did you then follow up with both stages?
The following year we added Pratt Street because the mayor of Hartford, Luke Bronin, who's still the mayor, wanted to shut down Pratt Street to vehicles completely.
Really?
And we were like, not a great idea because you have all these empty storefronts on the one side.
Uh-huh.
So how about we just do it at lunchtime? And they were, this is sort of a city initiative that they were going to shut the street down to vehicles at lunchtime.
Every day?
Monday through Thursday from 11 to 2 and Fridays 11 to 9. That's what we have now. He wanted to make it like they have in Denver and other cities where there's just a pedestrian walkway.
Oh, like a promenade?
Exactly. Oh. Exactly. Oh, we didn't think cool. we had the foot traffic for it yet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yet. Our ultimate goal is to get Pratt Street to that point.
I think you got to put a fountain in the middle of the street.
You got to put something in there so people know not to drive down it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the official names, though, the audio feed at Constitution Plaza,
yep.
that is on
Wednesdays.
Wednesdays. Yep. And then it's the Pratt Street patio.
You got it on Thursdays.
On Thursdays. And that's it. They're both at 12 o'clock.
Yes.
And do you have any... you want to shout out some names as to who's playing this year?
I do. So the Pratt Street Patio starts first on May 30th.
Ooh, coming up.
Coming wow. right up. And Frank Critelli will be playing first.
Uh-huh.
Frank Critelli was the first person to ever play Pratt Street for us.
He opened
the whole series. So every year I try to bring Frank back to open up.
Oh, that's cool,
season.
Man.
He's
like
become
that.
Our traditional opening yeah. act. And it helps that my boss loves them too. So it's real easy to book. And then the following week, June 5th, is when the audio feed series starts. And mm-hmm. Californum will be the first act up there on June 5th.
Oh, nice. So she's great.
She is.
She's really awesome. I'm going to get into some opinion questions here.
Oh, I like those. All right.
And there's not a lot. But they kind of tie into what we've been talking about because we're slowly running out of time here. But... given, and we touched upon this
okay.
a little bit before, that's enough. That's enough preface. I do that all the time.
It's all good.
And I'm going to leave that in. All I'm right. not even going to edit that out.
Do it.
Self-criticism is a good thing. Given the wealth of talent here in Connecticut, why is it that Connecticut is not on the proverbial map? Or is it? Do you have a reaction to that question?
I think... it is to a certain extent. And I think a lot of that is genre dependent.
Mm.
I think that
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. I think there are certain places that get a reputation for certain types of music.
Mm-hmm.
And even after their scene is old and dying, they're still known as this sort of beacon or bastion of X type of music.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how good other places are, if they're not a major city, they're not looked at as this sort of epicenter of XYZ.
Mm.
I think what works against Connecticut is that we don't have that one massive metropolis that people think that they need to flock to.
Mm.
We don't have Boston. We don't have Philly. We don't have Minneapolis. We don't have Seattle. We don't even have Portland, Oregon or Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Austin's massive, but I mean, we don't have that one thing. So we've got this scene that has just as much talent, I think, as a Portland, Oregon or, you know, other mid-market cities, but
sure.
it's spread out over a geographic area that's like five times the size of your average American city. Right. Mm. And because of that, you don't have a concentration of venues in one spot. Even a place like Athens, Georgia or Columbus, Ohio, these college towns,
mm-hmm.
you have that district of all the venues that all the bands play.
Yeah.
And that becomes sort of this, you know, embryonic breeding ground for live music and for their scene.
Mm-hmm.
Ours in Connecticut is kind of spread out. There's a little bit in New Haven. It's sprinkled some in New London. It's sprinkled some in Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like you're trying to connect all these dots
right.
into a scene, a statewide scene. and we just don't have the critical mass that we can compete with major cities. And so therefore, outside of our own giant scene bubble, you know, people aren't looking at us and going, oh, you have to go to Hartford. There's only 125,000 people who live in Hartford.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's people don't view it as a, as this mecca of arts and entertainment.
It's almost like our metropolis is kind of divided.
It is. It's like it's literally like if you took a scene like Austin, Texas, and you blew it up and scattered it all over like the West Texas Badlands.
Yeah.
Would you go to that scene out there? Like, would that still be viewed?
No, you just want to go to that one hub.
You'd want to go to that one hub. And so that's, I think, why Connecticut is at a slight disadvantage. All we can do here in state is continue to build upon what we've already built upon and try to get more music venues opened and try to get more people involved in the local scene and more supporters of the scene to get involved, because that's how you start building outside of the Connecticut Music Awards were mentioned in New York Times once.
Really?
Right? They made a little blip about like, oh, and Connecticut has its own award show.
Cool.
In the freaking New York Times. Like, that's because we were celebrating. We gave them a point. We gave them a pin they could stick in a map and go Connecticut. Boom.
Sweet.
So
I always thought that people, there's too many people like trying to be part of the Boston music scene or gravitating towards the Boston music scene or the New York music scene. Maybe not necessarily being part of those scenes, but that seems to be part of, I don't want to say problem because it's not really a problem, but a causation that we're stuck between these two metropolises that are huge.
Right.
And then, you know, like, the history behind Toad's Place, for example, was always Toad's Place was the cool place to stop
for
bands en route from New York to Boston or Boston to New York.
Right. The Doors played there. The Stones did a show there. Like, yeah.
But it's just a stop. You know, it wasn't like, hey, we're playing in New York tonight, or hey, we're playing in Boston tonight.
Well,
it was just
like,
we're going to stop at Toad's Place.
And there was a period
of time. Not even the city name.
Right. There was a period of time where everybody wanted to go to Brooklyn because that was the next new hot place.
Yeah.
Right. In the early 2000s, mid 2000s. And again, I think you'll always have musicians who are like, no, I need that big metropolis because I'm trying to, you know, I want to sell my songs and make money off that, like real money where I can quit my day job. Right.
Sure.
And so they feel they have to go to a big city. That's fine. Whatever. It's all good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that doesn't diminish what you have here.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I think there's a lot of great things going on here, and it took me a long time to realize it. And I'm kind of mad at myself that it took me that long, but, I still try to live my musical life as Vic Steffens always put it. He's like, I'm just trying to put Connecticut on the map. And I am too. And I hope other people that are here are trying to do the same thing.
Bloom where you're planted.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's a good analogy.
Thank you.
What's your favorite thing to do?
Man, that's,
I could get you in trouble with this question.
So many. Yeah, that's a dangerous question. Besides listening to music and writing, hiking in the woods, watching Twin Peaks. I don't know. There's a lot of things.
I like hiking.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. And we're just going to wrap things up here. Where, where is chipmccabe.com? You need a central hub.
It doesn't exist. I know. So many things. There's a Chip McCabe in like New Zealand who's some big real estate mogul. If you Google Chip McCabe, he's like, I think he has chipmccabe.com. So I don't think I'll ever be able to get it. But
just get chipmccabe.music.
Yeah, or it's something. Chipmccabe.ct. I don't know. I'd have to think of something.
It's just for ease of people to explore
find all the things,
all the chip channels, the metal dad, the wrong side of the tracks, all the things that you do.
Nah,
you do
keep
a lot.
You guessing. You got to go find it.
Make people search. Well, thank you for being here. Is there anything else you want to say?
I just want to say,
you wanna talk about.
Thank you for having me.
And
listen to the Metal Dad Radio Show and Wrong Side of the Tracks at CygnusRadio.com.
There you go. It almost sounded like a little commercial bumper.
I know, right? You like
good.
That?
That was professional. All those years in radio, hell. Awesome. There he is, everybody. Chip McCabe. What's the best? Just go to like themetaldad.com.
Yeah, themetaldad.com.
Metaldad.com.
Find me on the Facebooks.
And the Facebooks. I always forget about it. I hate promoting Mark.
I hate social media, but I'm there.
There you go. Well, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks
I appreciate
for having
it.
Me, man. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there he goes, Chip McCabe. What a guy. That was a fun interview. I had such a good time. Again, dude does so much for the Connecticut music scene. Definitely say hi to him. Go visit him. Check out his blog, themetaldad.com. Look him up on the Facebooks. Get in touch with him. Say hello. Say you heard him on the Seth Adam podcast. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, this is episode 9. Episode 8 was also released this week, and I will not be back with a new episode. Episode 10 on June 10th, and that's going to be with my friend, singer-songwriter Jeff Burnham. In the meantime, please be kind to one another. Please be kind to the earth. Thank you so much for listening. Please visit me, my website at sethadam.com. You can look me up on the Facebooks and Twitters and all that jazz, too. Please follow me at Spotify and listen to some tunes. I hope you enjoy them. I got a bunch of new music coming up over the summer as well as the fall. So stay tuned. Y'all have a great day. Cheers. You can tell who the real ones are. They won't.